I appreciate very much the Spirit of the Lord and how He has been blessing in the meeting. And I'll be quite honest with you. I've enjoyed just sitting and listening. I thought sometimes I understand how cooks feel. They like to just sit and enjoy someone else's meal. And I have thoroughly enjoyed the meals that the Lord has been providing us. I've also enjoyed the weather that the Lord has sent. And I'm going to tell you, the folks at home know, it was hot before the meeting. Over 100, and we had been there in service at home and praying, and as I know you were too, and requesting prayer that the Lord would favor us this year with some cool weather. And I remember, and I was telling somebody this evening, I remember driving to work and I heard the weather forecast and they were saying for the next couple of weeks, we don't see any relief in sight. And Wednesday night we were praying and asking the Lord to have mercy on us. And I remember going to work next day or so and I heard them come on the news, and it was like it was a special bulletin. You know how they do, and they're saying, this is going to happen here. Stay tuned. And they were talking about a break in the weather. And they came on, and they said, we just want to let you know that there's been a break in the weather, and this weekend is going to be the most perfect weekend you could ask for. And I thought, I know exactly why. They were saying before that there's no storms coming or anything that we can project, that we can foresee a break anytime. But dear ones, you remember that cloud the size of a man's hand or look like a man's hand? The Lord is still in control. I'm grateful this evening that we serve a mighty God, and I appreciate His blessings to us. I've written a question on the board that I'd like for us to consider this evening. For those of you that can't see the board, what I've written are the words, are you ready? And I wonder this evening how many times you and I have been asked that question. I would say that probably every one of us in here that are at least old enough to talk have been asked that question many times. And no doubt we have given a whole range of answers to that question, depending on the circumstances. From, no, I'm not ready. Not yet. I need a little more time. Give me just a few minutes and I'll be ready. To, yes, I'm ready. And I'm sure that probably many of us have answered that question in the affirmative. I'm ready. When in fact, we weren't really as ready as we thought we were. Those of you that are parents know what I'm talking about. You wake your child up to go to school or get them ready to go to service and tell them you need to go in there and get ready. And the next thing you know, you'll see them asleep on the couch or someplace. And you say, now, are you ready? Yes, I'm ready. Have you got your shoes on? No. Have you brushed your teeth? No. Have you combed your hair? No. I thought you were ready. Well, I'm almost ready. You know, sometimes we have in our mind, part of a definition of ready is a willingness of mind. And sometimes we think because in my mind I think I'm ready, that I'm ready, when in fact we aren't. And so we have to constantly ask our children, are you sure you're ready? Do you have all of these things? And our concern is that we don't want them to be penalized when they go to school for being tardy. And so we are constantly working with them to make sure that when it's time to go, they're ready. Do you know the Lord is just like that with us? He loves every one of us here tonight. And His utmost concern is that none of us pay a penalty for not being ready. And so in His mercy, He comes by time after time after time. And He'll ask us and He'll knock on our heart's door and He'll say, are you ready? And when we sometimes in our presumption, we'll say, yes, I'm ready. And then the Lord will allow something to happen to show us, well, maybe you're not quite as ready as you think you are. Well, do you know that's the mercies of the Lord? Yeah. I appreciate that very much. I was thinking about, there was a young man that I was talking to at work several years ago. And he was telling me about an incident that happened to him. I wasn't there at that time that it happened. I was working there, but I wasn't at work that day. And he was telling me about this incident later, and then some others were telling me about it as well. They were working on a high-rise PRV, and for those of you who don't know, we had some pumps at the time that pumped pressure up like 330, 340 pounds for a high-rise building, and just to be able to get it up and circulate it. But that was too great a pressure for the lower floor, so we had a pressure-reducing station that it would reduce it back down to where those floors could handle it. And they were working on that, and the boss was needing to blow the strainer down on that because it was acting up. And so he'd hooked a 2-inch hose up on it and was going to blow it down, and this young man had taken and grabbed the other end of the 2-inch hose, and he was going to hold it in the drain. Now, I don't know what all happened, but I have a feeling that he was probably just a little bit cocky in the way that he responded. Young man, strong, little 2-inch hose, ain't no big thing. That shouldn't be any big deal. And he grabbed that hose, and the boss must have sensed that because he decided that it's time to teach him a lesson. Well, this young man took that hose, and the boss asked him, "Are you ready?" And I can almost just imagine the answer that he gave. "Oh, yeah, hit me. Go ahead." Well, the boss hit that valve real quick a couple times. And before the next thing that he knew, he was laying flat on the ground, sopping wet. Now, if you've ever seen a water hose that had a lot of pressure on it and you didn't have the end, you turned it on and it's sitting there doing this, you can imagine taking that and putting about 300 more pounds of pressure on it and what it will do. I'm going to tell you, it'll take the starch out of you in a hurry. This young man, he discovered real quick that he wasn't as ready as he thought he was. Now, the boss felt bad about it later because he realized that he could have hurt him bad. To take and allow him to get hit like that with that kind of pressure and knock him flat on the floor, on a concrete floor, it could have hurt him bad. And he felt bad about it later. But I'm going to tell you, that young man learned a lesson. The next time he grabbed a hold of a hose like that, he wouldn't be as cocky about, "Yes, I'm ready." He would make sure that he had someone else helping him. Dear ones, tonight we need someone else to help us. We may think we're ready, but unless the Lord is helping you and I, we're not able to stand against the things that the enemy has to send our way. We need God desperately. I'd like for you to turn with me, if you will, back this up a little bit, over here to 1 Thessalonians, the 5th chapter. 1 Thessalonians, the 5th chapter, starting here in the first verse. It says, "But of the times and the seasons, brethren, you have no need that I write unto you. For yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so cometh as a thief in the night. For when they shall say, peace and safety, then sudden destruction cometh upon them, as travail upon a woman with child, and they shall not escape." Now the Apostle Paul was speaking to the Thessalonian saints here, and he was talking to them concerning Christ's coming. And he said in this first verse, "But of the times and the seasons, brethren, you have no need that I write unto you." Why do you suppose that the Apostle Paul made that statement? Do you think it was because that he had the attitude that many in our world today have, that it really don't matter? You don't have to worry about when the Lord's coming back. Because if he's going to come back, he's going to come back, and there's nothing you can do about it anyway, so you might as well just enjoy your life and go on. There's going to be everybody else that's going to be in the same place, so just go on. There's others that have the attitude that there's nothing going to happen. I've heard that all my life. In fact, they were talking about that back in the Bible times, and it still hasn't happened. So I don't think you have to worry about it happening in our lifetime. Do you suppose that that's why the Apostle Paul said what he did? No. Dear ones, it's important for you and I to recognize the signs of the time of the Lord's coming. The Lord, in His Word, gave us warning and indication of what it would be like. And He did that not just to prepare us. That was one of His major purposes to prepare us to be ready to meet Him when He comes. But I also believe that the Lord did it to prepare you and I to face the things that you and I will face in those times. The Lord is concerned about us, and He knows exactly what we'll need. And if you turn with me over here in this first chapter, I believe you understand why the Apostle Paul said it wasn't needful. In the first chapter here, the Apostle Paul gives us a little bit of a background of the saints here at Thessalonian, the Thessalonian saints. A little bit of understanding of their knowledge of the Scriptures, their knowledge and their experience with the Lord. And here in this first chapter of 1 Thessalonians in the 4th verse, he says, "Knowing, brethren, beloved, your election of God, for our gospel came not unto you in word only, but also in power and in the Holy Ghost, and in much assurance, as ye know what manner of men we were among you for your sake. And ye became followers of us and of the Lord, having received the word in much affliction with joy of the Holy Ghost, so that ye were examples to all that believe in Macedonia and Achaia. And from you sounded out the word of the Lord, not only unto them in Macedonia and Achaia, but also in every place your faith to Godward is spread abroad, so that we need not to speak anything. For they themselves show to us what manner of entering in we had unto you, and how ye turned to God from idols to serve the living and the true God, and to wait for the Son from heaven, whom he raised from the dead, even Jesus, which delivered us from the wrath to come." Dear ones, the reason that the Apostle Paul did not have to tell them about the signs of the times, the reason that he made the statement that he said here, "Ye have no need that I speak to you concerning the times and the seasons, concerning Christ's coming," was because that the Apostle Paul knew these people very well. He knew that, as it said in this 9th verse, that they had not only turned from idols to serve the living and the true God, but they were also waiting for His Son, Jesus. They were examples. They had gotten a hold of something, that they were examples that went out to all the people. And other people, when they saw them, they recognized that these people had been with God. And so it wasn't necessary for him to do that. Paul knew that they had a strong faith in God. He knew that they believed that Christ had died for their sins, and that one day he was coming back for them. And they were waiting for that. They were waiting for that. They were looking for the time that Christ would come for them. Paul also knew that they were not ignorant of the gospel, of the message of Christ. They had heard the teachings of Christ. They had heard the warnings of Christ of what it would be like when he came back. And so they were well aware of that. I'd like to turn over just briefly here for a little bit in Matthew and look at what Jesus said. This is in Matthew, the 24th chapter. Matthew, the 24th chapter, and Jesus was talking to his disciples here. And he was telling them some things concerning the destruction of Jerusalem and concerning his coming. And he said here, starting in Matthew 24 in the 36th verse, he said, "But of that day and hour knoweth no man, no, not the angels of heaven, but my Father only. But as of the days of Noah were, so also shall the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage, until the day that Noah entered into the ark. And they knew not until the flood came and took them all away, and so also shall the coming of the Son of Man be." As the Lord was talking to me about these thoughts earlier on, and I was reading this, and I thought, I wish there was a way that we could somehow convey to our minds this evening a picture of what it was like, as it were, in the days of Noah. And then when I came to the meeting in the first weekend, and Brother Ed brought forth the word that he did about the times then, and he gave us a clear, distinct picture of the scene of what was there. And I thought, Lord, you've already done that. You've given exactly what it's like. It was a wicked time. Sin was abounding. And as I've looked around our world, and I've seen the wickedness that is in our time today. I've thought different times, Lord, it must have been awfully bad. It must have been awfully bad for you to have destroyed the world in Noah's time. For you have destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. Because when I see all the wickedness that's happening, I'm going to tell you, dear ones, we are a very blessed people because we're sheltered from a lot of it. But there's a lot of wickedness that's going on out there. And when I look at those things and I hear accounts of those and I think, I've thought different times, Lord, it must have been awfully bad. But you know, the Lord said here in this 37th verse, but as the days of Noah were, so also shall the coming of the Son of Man be. The Lord was giving you and I a glimpse of what it's going to be like in that time. But you know, He didn't stop there. He went on and He said, for as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered into the ark. Now, I don't know about you, but that don't sound too awful bad compared to the wickedness that's happening right now in our world. When you hear of some of the things that are happening, innocent children, there's things that I wouldn't even begin to describe to you from this pulpit. And when you put all of that in context, this here doesn't really seem that bad, does it? But you know, Jesus said here, He said, for as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered into the ark. Dear ones, when you look at this, I find something here that is very important for us to understand. I believe it's very important for us to understand what is happening here. It wasn't just because that it was an especially wicked time that God destroyed the world in Noah's time, or for that matter, why He destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. I am persuaded this evening that there were just as wicked and evil deeds done in other times as they were then, before and after that time. And yet, God did not destroy the world because of that. Notice what He said here. He said here, for as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage until the time that Noah entered into the ark. Dear ones, I believe that the reason that God destroyed the world in Noah's time was the same reason that He destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. When God looked down upon the earth, He looked down upon those places and He saw the wickedness and it was very great. And He sent His word down that He was going to destroy them. There was a general lack of concern and conviction among the people. There was a general disregard to the message that went forth of warning. As we heard already in this meeting, in spite of all the time that Noah was there delivering the message to the people, in all the years that he was building the ark, we do not have recorded that there was one soul that was concerned enough to be willing to turn from their wicked ways and join Noah and his family in the ark. Dear ones, when you look at this, It was a place where the people were content to continue on with their lifestyles, eating, drinking, marrying, and giving in marriage, unconcerned and unwilling to change until the flood came. Now, I'm going to tell you, if you and I could get a picture of that scene in our minds this evening, it'd be a horrifying scene. I wonder how long it was from the time that God closed the door of the ark until the first bolt of lightning struck. I wonder how much time elapsed before they heard the thunder and began to feel the first raindrops, things that they had never experienced in their life. I wonder how long it took before they began to question whether they might should have listened to that old man. They might should have listened to that one that they thought, do you know, he's just missed it. When the Lord closed that door, I wonder how many of them thought they're going to starve in there to death and never thought once that anything else would happen. Do you know those people went on, and I am persuaded that the more that water rose, the higher their fear and their sense of "I missed it" began to rise. And it just went and went until it was too late. Do you know, dear ones, it was the same thing at Sodom and Gomorrah? Now, Lot didn't have near the time that Noah did. But you know, he tried his best to convince the people to change from their wicked ways. He begged, he pleaded for people to leave that wicked city. But they were unconcerned and unwilling to make a change until God sent fire down on that city. I'm going to tell you, dear ones, it's a horrible thing to ignore the warnings of God. Dear ones, it's not the wickedness that is in our world today that concerns me so much. And I don't want you to misunderstand me. I am highly concerned about some of the wicked acts and some of the things that are happening in our world. But I also know that the blood of Christ can cleanse the vilest sinner and make him clean. It's not those wicked acts that concern me so much. It's the lack of concern and conviction that I see when the Lord comes by and sends warnings. When he comes by and he begins to send messages of, "I'm going to send destruction upon this earth because of the wicked deeds of men," and yet you see a general lack of concern and conviction among the people in our world. I'm going to tell you, dear ones, that's the thing that concerns me the most. I look at this. I want to take and turn back over here to 1 Thessalonians. I want to see what the Apostle Paul said here. In this first verse, he said, "But of the times and seasons, brethren, you have no need that I write unto you. For yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so cometh as a thief in the night. For when they shall say peace and safety, then sudden destruction cometh upon them as travail upon a woman with child, and they shall not escape." It reminds me of the scripture in Proverbs, the 29th chapter, in the first verse. It says, "He that being often reproved hardeneth his neck shall suddenly be destroyed, and that without remedy." Dear ones, it's a serious thing to disregard the warnings of God. It's a serious thing to be unconcerned and unwilling to make a change when God comes by and he reveals things in our heart. As the Lord was talking to me about these thoughts, he reminded me of the Space Shuttle Challenger. Probably most of you remember. The Space Shuttle Challenger blew up 73 seconds into its liftoff on a cold winter day in December, I believe it was 1986. And on board that space shuttle, there was a school teacher. I believe her name was Krista McCullough. She was one of the first school teachers to ever take a space flight that was not an astronaut. NASA had high hopes for that flight. They had a lot of things that they were wanting to accomplish with that flight. They wanted to prove to the world that spaceflight had been reduced to in such a way that the common man could fly. Didn't take a skilled astronaut, that just someone common, just the normal, ordinary people, like a school teacher, could take a flight into outer space without any problems or any concern. They also wanted to take and showcase their high-tech equipment to our nation, because they wanted our nation to recognize what a wonderful program this was and to get behind them and support more money for their work. And there was something else they wanted to do as well. They wanted to influence the children, the youth of our land. They wanted to take and allow the children of our land to see this and to take and have such admiration. That's part of the reason they took a school teacher. They wanted them to look at this and follow this so that they, as young children, would be so enamored with this that as they grew up, they would say, "I want to be an astronaut. That's what I want to do." They were trying to influence them in that direction. And so they took and they brought lots of children, brought them down there to watch it live. And then there were just all across the country, maybe even across the world, there were schools that were taking and displaying this launch of this space shuttle live so that all the children could see it. And the teacher was going to teach classes in outer space. And I believe her first class, if I remember right, was about the ultimate field trip. They were trying their best to instill within them a desire. That's what I want. But something happened that they were not prepared for. 73 seconds into liftoff, the space shuttle blew up. And all their hopes and dreams on that flight disintegrated with that. Dear ones, if they had only understood the message that the Apostle Paul was preaching here. He said here in this third verse, "For when they shall say peace and safety, then sudden destruction cometh upon them as travail upon a woman." Dear ones, I can't say it enough. It's a very dangerous thing to disregard the warnings of God. It's a very dangerous thing to be unconcerned and unwilling to change when the Lord reveals some little thing in your life or my life, in our experience, to just go on and assume that it'll be all right. The Space Shuttle Challenger blew up because of a little defect. It had to do with an O-ring that they were made aware of, but that they ignored because that same defect had been there on multiple flights before this. They were under a lot of pressure on this flight, and they had to make it, and it was in the winter time, and it was cold, and it just added to the problem that they had. And yet, they thought, it's been there through all these flights, and it's not been a problem. And so, it wasn't even on the radar screen, so to speak, and they just went on. The astronauts, as they were preparing for takeoff, were going through their checklists, and they were checking off different things. Oxygen tank? Check. Okay. Fuel tank. Check. Okay. Oil tank. Check. Okay. Seat belts. Check. Helmet. And they just went on down the list until the message came, "Astronauts, are you ready for takeoff?" You know what their answer was? "Ready as ever." Wasn't even on the radar screen. Dear ones, it's a serious thing to ignore the warnings. I look at this. I want to read all of this again in our hearing here because I want us to get a hold of the message that the Apostle Paul was trying to convey to the people. It said, "But of the times and seasons, brethren, ye have no need that I write unto you. You already know what it's going to be like in that time. For yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so cometh as a thief in the night. For when they shall say peace and safety, then sudden destruction cometh upon them, as travail upon a woman with child, and they shall not escape. But ye, brethren, are not in darkness, that day should overtake you as a thief. Ye are the children of light and the children of the day. We are not of the night nor of darkness. Therefore, let us not sleep as do others, but let us watch and be sober. For they that sleep in the night, they that sleep, sleep in the night, and they that be drunken are drunken in the night. But let us who are of the day be sober, putting on the breastplate of faith and love and for an helmet, the hope of salvation." The Apostle Paul was warning the people here. Be careful. He's talking to the brethren. He's talking to those that are well aware. And dear ones, I believe every one of us here tonight are well aware of what the Lord has said is going to be like in that time. That it's going to come as a thief in the night. And the reason it's going to do that is because of the same reason that the Apostle Paul was warning the brethren, be careful lest what happens, what the devil is doing, your enemy is doing to the world around you, happens to you. Lest you allow him to lull you to sleep. To convince you that everything is okay. It's going to be all right. There's not a problem. It's been this way. I've been this way. Yes, the Lord has come by and he's knocked on my heart's door and he's revealed this. But the Lord has also blessed me different times, and so it's going to be all right. He's saying, be careful. Be careful that not that the enemy of your soul not do to you what he is doing to all the people in our world today. Slowly lulling them to sleep. Convincing them it's okay. And convincing them to let down their guard. It's okay. It'll be all right. I want to tell you something that happened. I hope my daughter doesn't mind. I never asked her if I could tell this. But it's something that happened at her wedding. If I remembered it all exactly right, as she was planning her wedding, her and her mother were working. One of the things that her mother told her was, when you get to that time, if you're going to eat or if you're going to drink, do it before you put your wedding dress on. Because after you put your wedding dress on, you don't want to take a chance of spilling anything. Well, that day came. Everything had gone without a hitch, seemed like. It was going well. And they were there, and it was time to get dressed, and she was getting ready. You sisters know exactly what I'm talking about. They were there, her aunts and different ones, and they were helping her get ready, and she had put her dress on. They were making sure that every detail. This was the ultimate moment for a bride to be able to go out and meet her future husband. And so they were making sure that all the wrinkles were out of the dress. Everything was just right. It was getting right down close to the time. And she said, I am going to have something to drink. Now, everything had gone well. And the warning was just kind of forgotten. It seemed like it was all going well. And so one of my brother-in-laws went to try to find her something to drink. He was looking for a pop, and there was none around there, no machines. And so he was walking across the parking lot, and he saw one of my nephews coming walking across the lot, and he was drinking a pop. And he said, where did you get that? And he said, I got it at the store. He said, do you have any more? No. He said, Jessica sure would like to have a pop. He said, this is all I've got. This one's mine. He said, but she would really like to have a pop. And he said, I put M&Ms in it. He said, she probably won't mind. He said, this is our wedding day. Would you mind giving that to her? She's awfully thirsty. He said, okay. He said, run it over there and give it to her. She's over there and told her where she was at. And so he runs over there. And he knocks on the door and he said, this is for Jessica. And he took it. Whoever took it from him took it and handed it to her. And dear ones, you know what happens when somebody is running with a bottle of pop. When you're shaking it up. We do, don't we? It builds up pressure. They handed it to her and she took it. Remember, we were getting right down close to time for the wedding. Not thinking anything about the warnings or anything like that. Oh, I just need a drink and then I'm going to be able to go. And she spun that cap off and you know exactly what happened. It just erupted. Dark pop with chocolate in it went everywhere. All over her wedding dress. Now, I would say the sisters probably understand that better than us brothers. But I'm going to tell you, they were horrified, to say the least. She stood there, and she looked, and all of her hopes and dreams began to crash. And she stood there and looked down, and her dress was just soiled with dark stains of pop and chocolate all over this white dress. Now, can you imagine the thoughts that go through your mind about that time? This was 20 minutes before it was time to walk in. You don't go to a wedding with a spare dress. What are you going to do? Can you imagine the thought of walking down that aisle in an assembly of 200 or 300 people, and all the people, as soon as you walk in, go, do you see the shock and the disappointment? Oh, what did she do? I can't believe. Do you see what I'm talking about? Can you imagine the horror, the disappointment? But most of all, can you imagine as a bride walking down that aisle and seeing, as you look at the bridegroom and you see that look of joy and anticipation as he sees you turn to one of horror and disappointment? Can you imagine? I want you to get that picture in your mind. Now you can understand why, as she stood there weeping, everything looked like it had crashed in. I'm going to tell you, dear ones, this is a picture that we need to get in our minds. The devil knows every desire, every hungering and thirsting that you have. And dear ones, if there is something in your heart and life that God has come by and knocked on your heart's door and said, you better take care of that. You say, it's not really something major. It's not really something that I would even classify as sin. But it's a desire. It's a feeling. It's an ambition. It's an attitude. It's something down there that the Lord came by and He began to knock on our heart's door and He began to say, you better get rid of that. You better take care of that before you take and come out to meet me. I'm going to tell you, dear ones, it's a serious thing to ignore the warnings of God. It's a serious thing to be unwilling and unconcerned when the Lord comes by and He begins to knock on our heart's door. I'm concerned this evening when I see the lack of concern in our world. I have appreciated very much the tenderness that I've seen in the meeting and how people have gone and yielded. Do you know it's because of the influence that the Lord has had among His people? But I'm going to tell you, dear ones, I'm concerned about those who are gone out into sin, and the Lord sends warning after warning after warning. I'm concerned about those who have perhaps been saved, that feel like I'm ready, and yet the Lord has come by, perhaps in this meeting, perhaps before, and He's knocked on our heart's door and He's saying, you know, that's something you better be aware of. You don't want to have that in your heart, in your life, when you come to meet me. And yet, some have gone on and on and on until it's not even on the radar screen. And when they get to a place when they begin to think about going out to meet the Lord, it's not even something. They've gotten to the place where the enemy has convinced them that, you know, the Lord has blessed your life all these times, and it's going to be all right. And so now it's not even something that's way up there on the screen. And when they start checking off, yes, okay, I'm ready. I'm ready. I've got everything. I don't have my shoes on. I don't have my belt on. But I'm ready. Do you see what I'm talking about? There's a danger, dear ones, that the enemy is trying to lull people in our world to sleep, to an indifference, to an unconcern, to where they don't feel the real convicting Spirit of the Lord dealing with their hearts. And that's exactly what happened in the time of Noah, and it's what happened in the time of Sodom and Gomorrah. They were content to go on as they were until that time came. Dear ones, if there's something that the Lord is talking to our hearts about, I want to encourage you. Don't ignore the warning. Be willing to go all the way with God. Ask the Lord, Lord, help me to be willing to do whatever it takes. Because I'm going to tell you, dear ones, if you don't, the enemy knows the very desire of your heart. He knows what you're hungering and thirsting after. And dear ones, he will find something to satisfy that. And he'll add a little to it. When the Lord brings things to us, he adds no sorrow to it. But I want to tell you, dear ones, when the enemy brings something our way, he adds something that will cause more sorrow. It'll be deeper sorrow. It'll be something that will take that when the enemy sees that desire that has not been taken care of, he will find something at some point when the opportunity is right, and he'll present it to you. And something will happen that you're not prepared to handle. And the sorrow that is with that will be remorseful. She was there, weeping, not knowing what to do. After the shock began to wear off, remember this is 20 minutes before the wedding. One of my sisters came and they were all there. What are we going to do? And she dropped to her knees and she got a little tissue and she had a bottle of water. And she got it and she poured the water out and she started washing one of the spots. And when she did, it came out. And she said, I want you to go get all the rags and all the water that you can get. And I'm going to tell you, you talk about ants covering you. They were swarming around her, scrubbing and washing, until when it was time for her to take and come out. And I stood out there and waited, and I'd been out there praying, Lord, have mercy, just like everyone else. And as she came out that door, and I took her on my arm, and I looked, and I could not see a single spot on that gown. I'm going to tell you, they had taken and scrubbed that. They had put something on her eyes to take away the tears. And when she came out of there, people didn't have any idea what had happened. And she went down that aisle, and that joy and that anticipation on her companion was not disappointed. Dear ones, this is my burden this evening. I want you to know tonight, that's what the people of God are here for. I want you to know that's exactly what the Lord wants to do in your life and in mine. He wants to take and He wants to look in everything that the enemy has used to take and soil our robes of righteousness to cause you and I that when we come and stand before the Lord, that instead of a look of joy and anticipation, that we see a look of disappointment, of hurt and rejection because of the sin that the enemy has stained our robes of righteousness with. I'm going to tell you, dear ones, that's what the devil wants. And you know what he'll do? He'll sit back and he'll laugh. He'll sit back and he'll look and he'll laugh and he'll mock at your calamity. And it'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth. But I want to tell you, dear ones, it don't have to be that way. The reason that the Lord has spared time right up through this meeting, and the reason that the Lord has His people here, is because they're looking. They're concerned. And when they see the sins that the enemy is trying to infiltrate people's lives, they're looking at that with horror and they're saying, Lord, have mercy upon them. Because they recognize what it's going to mean for that soul to go out into eternity and face the Lord with a robe that is not of righteousness, of self-righteousness, of sin, of pride, of bitterness, of attitudes, of whatever it is that the enemy wants to stain your life. And they recognize that the look of disappointment and horror on the Lord's face as He says, depart from me, you workers of iniquity. Dear ones, the people of God recognize that, and God does. And I want you to know here tonight that if you're here and you're not ready, if you can really say within your heart, no, I'm not ready, I want you to know, I'm not so concerned about how deep you've gone in sin. I'm not so concerned about what all you've been involved in, because I want you to know the blood of Christ can cleanse the vilest sinner and make it clean. He can take and He can clean you up from the crown of your head to the sole of your feet, to where when you come out and you stand before the Lord, you can stand there and you can see that look of anticipation and joy on His face. And if you're here tonight and you think you're ready, but the Lord has taken and come by and He's knocked on your heart's door in this meeting, and you've gone on, you haven't yielded. Or if He's taken and somehow throughout your life He's begun to talk to you and show you that, you know, you're really not as ready as you thought you were, I want you to know that the Lord is able to take. If you are willing to humble yourself, as we heard earlier on in the meeting, if you're willing to make yourself vulnerable, doesn't matter what all the other people are here looking on, but you're willing to take and make yourself vulnerable and come down to an altar of prayer, I want you to know that the power of the blood of Christ can cleanse every spot of imperfection. It can take and make you perfectly ready to where you can take and go out and stand before the Lord and say, yes, I'm ready. Come. Even so, come, Lord Jesus. Dear ones, I want to ask you the question tonight. Are you ready? Are you really ready? Do you have everything clear in your life? If you're not, can I plead with you? The Lord has given us one more night of the meeting. It's almost over. The Lord has given us a little more time. He spared us. I want to plead with you to be able to make yourself vulnerable, to cry now before the Lord instead of standing before Him with weeping and gnashing of teeth. Lord, now I realize I should have taken care of it. I wish I had. You don't have to be like they were in Sodom and Gomorrah. You don't have to be like they were in the time of Noah's time. You can take and have the peace of God that passeth all understanding in your hearts and lives tonight. My desire and my burden is that we be ready. Every one of us. I'm going to tell you, dear ones, as I looked on and I saw that, it was a very anxious moment. But I'm going to tell you, when I saw her walk out, clean and pure, not a spot, there was such a joy and such a happiness. And I want you to know tonight, that's what we're looking for. We're not looking at the spots. We're not looking at all the other things, dear ones. You say, oh, the saints this or that. I'm going to tell you, dear ones, the true saints of God are looking and they're longing for the Lord to take and allow His blood to come down and cleanse you. And I'm going to tell you what they're doing. They're sitting in their benches. They're sitting in their cabins, wherever they're at. And they're praying and they're begging the Lord to have mercy upon you. Because they want you to be able to stand before Him and see that look of anticipation and that joy upon His face. May the Lord bless you this evening.